idea because of Guantanamo Bay's unique legal status, denying detainees habeas corpus and other rights afforded U.S. citizens. Ken.
Rich, thanks. The Oscar nominations are out. Live to Los Angeles, Fox Radio's Jessica Rosenthal.
Ken, the big contender with 13 nominations?
Taraji P. Henson in The Curious Case of Benjamin Button.
Brad Pitt. In The Curious Case of Benjamin Button.
It was also nominated for Best Picture, along with Frost Nixon, Milk, The Reader, and Slumdog Millionaire. Best Actor nominations include Mickey Rourke, Sean Penn, Frank Langella. Best Actress noms include Kate Winslet and Anne Hathaway. Of course, the late Heath Ledger got the expected nod for supporting actor in The Dark Knight. Ken.
Jessica, thank you. And at the U.S. State Department.
I am absolutely honored and thrilled beyond words.
Employees welcome Hillary Clinton, who's starting her first day on the job as Secretary of State. You're listening to Fox News Radio, fair and balanced.
Head and Shoulders, when used regularly, gives you awesome, visibly flake-free hair you don't have to think about. So what goes on in the head of a Head and Shoulders man?
When did it become okay for athletes to smack each other's butts? Brain surgeons probably can't do that. It's just not tolerated. Lawyers, certainly not. Maybe a few of them. I don't know. Then again, suits and scrubs don't really entice the hand like spandex pants, do they?
When you don't have to think about your hair, your mind is free to wander. Head and Shoulders. Respect the scalp, get the hair.
What if we told you we'd created the perfect card for your business? A card that can give you the working capital you need, interest-free. A card that can earn you rewards to reinvest in your business. A card that's not a credit card. Well, meet the American Express Open Charge Card. To get the purchasing power millions of owners already have in their wallets, call 1-800-NOW-OPEN. American Express Open. Calling all business owners. Terms, conditions, and restrictions apply.
President Barack Obama to hold meetings with economic advisors for the second day in a row, but he's missing one key member, his Treasury Secretary. Tim Geithner awaits confirmation from the Senate. The Finance Committee expected to recommend confirmation this morning to the full Senate. At yesterday's hearing,
the senators asked the nominee about the controversy over his payroll taxes. He didn't pay $34,000 worth of payroll taxes, Social Security and Medicare taxes while he was working for the International Monetary Fund here between 2001 and 2004. He got pounded by several Republican senators about that yesterday.
Fox Business Network's Peter Barnes. For now, the violence in Gaza is basically over, barring a couple of shellings by Israeli gunboats. Israeli troops completing their pullout yesterday, but there's worry about the reconstruction and reconstitution of Hamas arsenal.
The many hundreds of tunnels between Gaza and Egypt have been a key lifeline since Israel began its blockade of Gaza more than a year and a half ago. Big business, everything from food and fuel to people and weapons are brought in. Israel claims it destroyed 80% of the tunnels because Hamas used them to smuggle in weapons. But today, Gazans were out repairing them. Hundreds are said to be up and running already. Residents say fuel and kerosene stoves, which are desperately needed, are already making their way through. It's not clear if the trade in arms through the tunnels has resumed. In Jerusalem, Pia Chattopadhyay, Fox News Radio.
Clark McMillan wants his money. He spent 22 years in prison for raping and kidnapping two teenagers, a crime he did not commit, released after all those years after being cleared with DNA evidence. He sued the state of Tennessee for his false imprisonment and says he needs that cash settlement.
I was put in prison for something I didn't do. Now, no matter, I have to justify why I need my money to live like any other citizen.
McMillan says the state placed most of his settlement in an annuity, receiving $250,000 initially in a lump sum. He was awarded almost $1 million. I'm Ken Duffy, Fox News Radio.
You're listening to 1460 WVOX and WVOX.com, the official stations of New Rock City, the place where you can enjoy a wholesome family entertainment experience.
Here's the updated weather forecast. Westchester County and vicinity. Big area high pressure is just to our south. It'll be drifting offshore. It'll be on the west end of that system. That means a southwest flow and some warmer temperatures. Our highs today will range into the middle 30s. Tonight it's going to be partly cloudy. Our nighttime lows back to about the teens near 20. Tomorrow even warmer. With partial sunshine on Friday, our highs will range between 42 and 47 degrees. At night, build back to some cloud cover. Strong cold front moves through the area, and that's going to bring us some rain showers, then maybe some snow flurries overnight, Friday into Saturday. Nighttime lows in the 20s. Saturday's weather features the chance of a flurry or two. Otherwise, partial sunshine, trending colder, starting out in the mid-30s, dropping back into the teens to near 10 at night. And on Sunday, we've got a mostly sunny but cold day, highs of only around 25 to 30 degrees. Back to an increase in clouds, and there's a chance of some snow showers or some light snow by later Monday. Recapping for today, sunny to partly sunny with our highs ranging back into the 30s. I'm meteorologist Steve Pelletieri for Whitney Media, WVOX, WVIP.
The latest forecast from the 1460 WVOX Weather Center. Brought to you by Entergy and the Indian Point Energy Center. Right for New York.
At Entergy, meeting our region's need for reliable, affordable, and clean electricity is an everyday success story. That's because our Indian Point Energy Center supplies up to 38% of the region's power needs. It also produces some of the least expensive power generated in the region. And most importantly, it does not produce greenhouse gas emissions. That's right, zero greenhouse gases. This plays a key role in helping this area improve its air quality. So it should come as no surprise that a growing number of environmentalists, including Dr. Patrick Moore, the co-founder of Greenpeace, say nuclear power is a vital tool in the fight against global warming. To learn more, visit us on the web at www.safesecurevital.com. Because the more you know, the more you realize that Indian Point's clean, reliable, and affordable energy is a big part of the climate change solution.
1460 WVOX.
Good morning and welcome to Environmentally Sound. I am Bob Levensold, your host for this series on the natural world, education, and culture. We bring you guests from diverse disciplines, scientists, activists, authors, educators, entertainers, and public officials. We seek to stimulate your curiosity, intellect, and passion. Today's news from the natural world. Today is Thursday, January 22nd, 2009, the 33rd day of winter. We have gained, yes, gained 1 minute of daylight since yesterday, 21 minutes since last we met 2 weeks ago. Days will continue to lengthen until the first day of summer, June 21st, which is also Father's Day this year. Isn't it nice? The bright spot in winter is that the days lengthen, more daylight. The sun rose 7:14 this morning. It will set at 5 o'clock this evening. We will have 9 hours, 46 minutes of daylight today. The moon rose 4:48 this morning. It will set at 1:35 this afternoon. We are directly between last quarter and new moon phase. We will reach full phase again on February 9th. Our next high tides in New Rochelle. It's pretty high. It was 9:14 p.m. Yonkers, 7 o'clock p.m. Dobbs Ferry, 7:28. Havistraw, 8:10 p.m. And Peekskill at 8:23 p.m. Now, just a personal note, this month marks 7 years that Environmentally Sound has been on the air. I continue to enjoy bringing you interesting and provocative guests, and I thank Bill O'Shaughnessy for allowing me the freedom to program as I see fit, Don Stevens for his constant support, David O'Shaughnessy as well. The station staff is great, and I feel right at home at WVOX. Onward to year 8. Now, our regular feature, names of American service members who have lost their lives in Iraq. May they live on in all of our hearts. The most recent report of American deaths in Iraq, 4,228, 635 more in Afghanistan. The best estimate of wounded in action in both countries, Americans wounded in action, is 33,620. That is just American casualties. There are other coalition casualties and, of course, many Iraqis and Afghanis. Casualties, Staff Sergeant Justin L. Bauer, age 24, from the 82nd Airborne Division from Loveland, Colorado, died when a roadside bomb hit him in Baghdad on January 10th. Staff Sergeant Anthony D. Davis, age 29, 75th Ranger Regiment, Daytona Beach, Florida. He was shot during combat operations on January 6th in northern Iraq. Senior Airman Omar J. McKnight, 22. He's an Air Force man. He's from Marrero, L.A. Died of a non-hostile incident. I still never know what that means. 117, January 17th in Balad, Iraq. Somebody please tell me what a non-hostile incident is when a man 22 years old dies in a war zone. I really would like to know. Sergeant Mark Key R. Porter, age 28, of the Marines, from Brighton, Massachusetts, in also a non-hostile incident on January 11th in Anbara Province. Three of these four American servicemen were alive on the date of our last broadcast 2 weeks ago. May they live forever in our hearts, and may this feature come to an end in the very near future, because there are no more deaths to report. Got a couple of quick reviews for you. I saw the Pal Joe. Oh, let me give you my little intro. This is the Culture Corner. These are my reviews on movies, plays, opera, what have you. And keep in mind, they're just my opinions, and everyone has the right to their own, because everyone has the right to be wrong. Okay, Pal Joey, the Broadway musical. Let us start with what is good about this show. The dancing and choreography are great. There were moments when I thought I was at dance theater, not a Broadway musical. I also liked the use of turntables and effective sets. The flower gowns in one scene drew deserved applause. It was just the costumes that got the applause. Now to the bad part. First of all, the play. Don't think that just because the music of a play was written by Rodgers and Hart that it is a good play, or that even the music is good. Wrong and wrong. The book is silly enough that it would take really good music to make it work, and it doesn't have really good music. The one song we all know, the classic Bewitched, Bothered, and Bewildered, delivered nicely by Stockard Channing, is great. It's a great song, but one great song among 18 songs is just simply not enough. Matthew Risch, who plays Joey, is a good dancer. He has a good singing voice, but he lacks the charisma to bring a lead character to life. Take a silly story, marginal songs except for one great one, and a leading man without charisma, and you ain't got much. I have no clue why they would revive this play at all. There are many plays, both new and old, which would blow this one away. Nothing against revival. South Pacific is doing great, and West Side Story coming up soon should be great as well. But this one doesn't cut it. Spend your $126 somewhere else. Okay, now the movie Doubt. Meryl Streep is arguably the best actor we have. She creates characters different from herself. It is the lesser actor who just reads his lines and pretends to be someone he isn't. The greater actor creates a person from whole cloth, then moves into that person. Think Marlon Brando as The Godfather. Streep plays opposite Philip Seymour Hoffman, who is adequate as the priest after whom Streep's nun goes. The other fine performance is delivered by Viola Davis, who was nominated for a Golden Globe Award for this film. I think others were as well. She kicks butt, though, creating the character of Mrs. Miller, the mother of a young adolescent boy at the Catholic school at which the drama unfolds. Well, drama is the functional word. It is difficult to make a drama work. When you're dealing with serious material, you have to do it seriously. You can't lose the mood or audience attention will suffer and the movie falls flat. And that doesn't quite happen here, but almost. If not for the great acting of Ms. Streep and Ms. Davis and the competent acting of Philip Seymour Hoffman and Amy Adams, the story would not be compelling enough to work on its own. This is one of those films which tells a story with no real reason to be told. He doubts, she is certain until she also has doubts. I doubt this film would get much play. It will be laid quietly to rest. It's only historic significance that one of the great actors of American cinema, Meryl Streep, was in it. All right, now I have some remarks on the change of presidents I'd like to share with you. Mainstream Democrats and Republicans alike will agree with much of this editorial, if not the tone, then the substance. We are each a unique combination of views on a wide range of issues. Liberal Democrats won't like my stance on gun control. Conservative Republicans won't like my views on abortion. People of the far left and far right are unlikely to agree with me on much. I'm unashamedly delighted by the election of Barack Obama. He is my president. I'm happy to be rid of George Bush and his abomination of an administration. President Obama is more forgiving than I am, though, which is a good thing. I would pursue legal action against them. But Obama is the one who has to get things done, and I am confident that he will. So be it. Many people are saying he is untried. That's true enough, but I believe in him. I believe he will turn this country and, without sounding grandiose, the world around. No, I don't expect miracles in the Middle East. Those people have hated each other for 4,000 or so years. I can only wish him luck. No expectations. There are too many diehard Jews and Muslims, too much hatred, too much history. And I don't believe Al-Qaeda, Hamas, Hezbollah, and other terrorist groups and other whatever groups are just going to lay down their arms and give up their struggles. That war is not over. War, period, is not over. I have no illusions about the human race's ability to make peace, a nice goal, but probably not attainable anytime soon. The previous administration made things worse. They went after a target they had previously chosen, not the correct one. The Afghan war, on the other hand, seems necessary, and Barack, my president, will pursue it. nor do I believe that President Obama will make major steps against global warming. His contribution will be that he will address it, not ignore or deny it altogether, as the previous administration did, along with the radical right, when it suited some lesser purpose, like politics or greed. He will listen to scientists. He will not grant leases for drilling of pristine public lands. His EPA will not delist endangered species for politics or profit, nor will they allow coal-fired power plants to relax pollution control procedures and violate the Clean Air Act, all hallmarks of the Bush administration. Barack will close Guantanamo. I think I heard this morning that he's doing that today. He will end the Iraq war. He will use correct procedures to wiretap suspects and not flout the Constitution and federal law. There will be an end to torture, end to lying, to appointing radical judges, to filling key positions with political people rather than qualified ones. If there's a natural disaster, President Obama will deal with it expeditiously. I have never felt so patriotic as now. I believe in the United States of America now and look forward to the next 4 and hopefully 8 years. We are back on track. My sin is pride. Proud to be an American on this day. Now, if anybody wants to respond to these remarks, please feel free to log on to www.environmentallysound.org. Use whatever colorful language you wish. I know some people disagree with what I say, but, you know, you can say what you say and I say what I say. Just keep in mind that you're responding to an independent, not a knee-jerk liberal. I'm an Army veteran who believes in the necessity of war. The Republican Party has lost its way, but I have no great confidence in the Democratic Party to hold the banner high either. Politicians, even the good ones, are of a breed. They are corruptible and often become corrupt. That doesn't mean that they steal or accept bribes, although some do. It means that they lose their way. It means that the salary, prestige, benefits are too good to surrender to principle, even for the principled ones. They are deal makers, and the devil makes deals. Is it a liberal who believes that the Supreme Court got it right last June 26th when they said the Second Amendment allows all citizens to keep a gun at home for protection? Most liberals think that no one should have guns. Well, I think gun control laws are necessary, but only to keep guns in the hands of nonviolent, rational people like myself. Is it a liberal who believes that gay couples should have the same rights as straight couples, except that the word marriage should be reserved only for heterosexual couples? Progressive, yes, and independent. One of my favorite public officials is a Republican, New Rochelle's Lou Trangucci, straight talker, fiscally rational. Another of my favorite politicians is a Democrat, Ernie Davis from Mount Vernon. And for the first time in my life, I was acknowledged twice when President Obama was inclusive. He said we are all to be included, white and black, straight or gay, Christian, Muslim, Jew, and non-believer. Yes, twice included. Count me in, Barack. It has been a long 8 years. At last, we have a president. At last, I can be proud again. You are listening to WVOX AM 1460 in New Rochelle. If you are listening in Coral Gables, Florida, Shaker Heights, Ohio, Lexington, Kentucky, or Lexington, Massachusetts, or Bayonne, New Jersey, you have logged on to www.wvox.com, and you are listening live. Okay, my guest today is Kathy Rikes, forensic anthropologist, professor, author, producer of the TV series Bones, which is based on her life and work. Just how much Temperance D.C. Brennan resembles Professor Rikes, we are about to find out. Welcome, Kathy Rikes.
Good morning.
Good morning. So nice to have you on.
Thank you.
You're in Charlotte, North Carolina, are you?
Yes, I am, finally. Just back from 2.5 weeks in Central America.
Central America, how nice. How nice. Which country, may I ask?
Well, let's see. I was in Colombia, Panama, Costa Rica, and then up through Mexico.
Very nice. So this was just recreation, I presume?
Well, I give lectures aboard cruise ships occasionally. So it was part work, part fun.
In fact, you've given lectures in... if I remember correctly, Australia, France, New Zealand, Thailand, Italy. I'm leaving out many, of course, many states and Canada,
right.
Canada where you also work. So I see. So it was a working vacation. I didn't think that you could fit in a real vacation from having read about you.
Well, it's not too demanding.
How is your weather there in Charlotte, North Carolina?
You know, when I got in last night, there was actually a little trace of snow on the ground.
Is that unusual?
Astounding.
Is that unusual for North Carolina?
Yes, very. Apparently all the courts and the schools and everything was closed here. on Tuesday.
Really? In fact, I have a North Carolinian in the studio with me, former mayor of Mount Vernon, New York, Ernie Davis. He's listening in as well.
Oh, okay.
And he's a North Carolinian as well.
Well, we get snow in the mountains, but not down here on the Piedmont.
He knows where you're talking about. I really don't. Okay, let's talk about we'll talk about a lot of things today, Kathy. Let's start with Temperance Brennan. Temperance Brennan is your protagonist, your alter ego, perhaps. She's overworked and underpaid, you say. But I imagine that with all the things you do, and that as a producer of a successful network TV series, while you may be overworked, I doubt that you're underpaid. But of course, that's you, not Tempe. What is it like producing for TV?
Well, I'm having a good time with the show. Often you hear authors who are very unhappy with the way that their work has been translated, but our executive producers and our cast and just the whole orientation of the show, I've just been delighted with the way things have turned out. The character's a bit different on TV. I think of TV Tempe and book Tempe, and we can talk about how they're different.
Well, we can talk about it. And in fact, I'm almost done with Devil Bones. I'm enjoying it. In fact, I can't wait to get off the air so I can run home and finish it. I just didn't have a chance to finish it all. But I'm about three quarters through, and it's racing me along. I just really, let's talk fast so I can get off the air quick so I can go read. But it is different. On TV, Emily Deschanel, how do you pronounce her name?
That's correct, Deschanel.
Okay, Emily Deschanel. She plays almost a Mr. Spock from Star Trek type. She is logical. She's like Spock. A book Tempe isn't like that. She's much more emotional. She's got her alcoholism buzzing around in the back. I can't imagine that TV Tempe is like that. Why don't you comment somewhat on the differences?
Well, TV Tempe's younger also. TV Tempe's 30-something, whereas the book Tempe is
40-something.
And TV Tempe, of course, is in Washington, D.C.
Right.
Whereas book Tempe works either in the Carolinas or in Quebec, in Montreal.
Right.
I think of TV Tempe, and as you say, their personalities are different. On TV, Tempe could use a little work with her people skills. She's so devoted to her work that she really hasn't gotten out much and acquired very many skills with regard to popular culture and social polish. But I think of the TV Tempe as kind of a prequel to the book Tempe. It's an earlier point in her life. It's before she started moving, into the forensic work in Quebec.
And meeting Ryan.
Before she met Ryan, before she got married and unmarried, before the colorful period in her past that I allude to with regard to alcohol. In the books, we never really talk
you see,
about it up front, but she's had this colorful period
but
back there.
TV Brennan is not an alcoholic, right?
No, not at all. She'll sit down and have a drink still.
So you're saying it's somewhere, I'm sorry, you're saying that somewhere in between her TV role and her book role, she becomes an alcoholic?
That's how I think about it. But then I wanted to create a character that had flaws. That was approachable, that wasn't perfect, and yet flaws that she's dealing with. So that's one of them. And in both the show and in the book, we wanted a character with a sense of humor. The show has humor to it. And I think in the book, perhaps that comes out a little bit more, her sense of humor, especially about herself.
In the book, on TV, of course, her relationship with David Boreanaz is... they have a very a wonderful repartee. They joke very nicely together, and even when they're not joking, their repartee is just very amusing.
Yeah, and it kind of reflects the main theme of the show. On the one hand, you have the squints, as he calls them, scientists, sort of logical and insist on deduction and experimentation and observation. On the other hand, you have the Celie Booth, who represents the good old-fashioned gut instinct, legwork, cop approach to crime solving. And those differences of attitude often lend themselves to humor.
Kind of like your skinny Slidell character.
Exactly, yeah.
This is the first of your books that I've been acquainted with. Is he a recurring character, Skinny Slidell?
Now, Tempe moves between the Carolinas and Quebec. So when she's in Charlotte, yes, Skinny is this old, vine, crusty, rather rigid detective that she has to work with. So Skinny's been there in a couple of the books at least. And he'll be back.
I'm sure. And I'm looking forward to Ryan. I don't know if I'm going to meet Ryan in this book. Don't tell me. No spoilers.
Okay.
I want to get home and read the rest of this. But I do look forward to it because you're not. Now, here's something about you, Kathy. You are a forensic anthropologist. You're a scientist, a squint, if you like.
Right.
You are an author. You are attractive. I've got pictures of you. You keep yourself groomed. You're
Oh, it's amazing what they can do with airbrushing.
Yeah, I know.
Photoshop.
But if I take the makeup off and I take the nice coiffures off and I even have a younger picture of you. It's hard to believe it's you. Long, flowing blonde hair. Is that you as well?
Oh my goodness! What picture do you have?
Well, I'll have to send you a copy of it. You're wearing almost a night dress. I mean, it's not too revealing, but it's got some lace on it. I'll have to send you a copy just so you'll see what I'm talking about. But there are many, many pictures of you on Google in case you didn't know it.
I'm afraid there are. I actually bit the bullet and made myself a Facebook page.
Did you?
Yeah.
Well, but your website, I'm sure, covers all that and much more as
right.
well. Well, now I lost, actually with all of that, I lost my original question. But, well, you are all of these things. Were you, first of all, were you a nerdy child?
I was a kid that was more interested in science, I guess. I would rather be outside hiking through the woods or poking at a dead squirrel or, you know, catching snakes or worms in a jar or something than inside playing with dolls or watching, you know, shows on television.
And did you have friends? Were your friends nerdy as well? Did people make fun of you because you were?
No, they
that
never
way?
Made fun of me. I was actually a high school cheerleader.
I can believe it. Looking at you, I can believe it.
But I was just more interested in those aspects than the more frivolous aspects, I guess.
And you became one of, I think, if I remember correctly, it's 77 forensic anthropologists that have ever been certified?
Yeah, we're a fairly small group. I think we might be up to 78 now that are board certified.
And some of them have passed, or are you all still working?
Some have passed, so there are not that many of us actually out there practicing. A few have retired, and I'm guessing there may be 55 of us actually who are board certified, and that's very important today.
Yes.
Since forensic science has become so hot and sexy all of a sudden, to determine who are the real players and who are people that are just hanging up their shingle because they've had a passing experience with forensic chemistry or psychology or anthropology. So I think there are about 55 of us actually out there working who are board certified.
Now, you say also that in all of your spare time you write.
I do.
And yet you're... as TV Tempe, and again, we're going to have to get into who you are, who they are. You sounds to me like you're you don't lack for any activities in the social department, shall we say?
Well, I do what everyone does. You know, I go to the theater, I go to sports events, I go to out to dinner with friends. I play tennis. I'm trying to learn to play golf, which is not going very well.
Ernie Davis also plays tennis.
Yeah.
Kathy, we have about a half a minute. Let me just ask you quickly. The writers write, and then you read the scripts for accuracy. Who has the final word, and do the writers really listen to you?
The executive producers have the final word, and then the studio, and then the network.
Okay.
Many levels.
All right, so let's leave it at that for this moment. We're going to take a break for the news, and we'll have you back shortly after the half hour, and then you'll be on till the hour. Good?
Thank you.
Okay. You are listening to Environmentally Sound on WVOX AM 1460. I am Bob Levinsohl, your host. In the studio with me, sitting quietly and taking it all in, is Ernie Davis, former mayor of New Rochelle. If you are listening in Myers Park, North Carolina, Elizabeth, North Carolina, or New Jersey, Matamoros, Mexico, Benin City, Nigeria, or Mount Vernon, Virginia, you have logged on to www.wpox.com.
This is the authentic voice of the people.
It's a community station.
AM 1460, WVOX.
Fox News Radio, I'm Melanie Lyons. Confirmed by the Senate yesterday, Secretary of State Hillary Clinton raring to go.
And now, ladies and gentlemen,
Let's get to work.
Secretary Clinton says robust diplomacy and effective development are the best long-term tools for securing America's future. The Dow down 162 points this first hour of trading amid discouraging economic news.
Earnings for Microsoft missed expectations, and the software giant is slashing 5,000 jobs over the next 18 months. And then there's that bad economic news you mentioned. First-time jobless claims jumped to 589,000 last week, and construction of new homes plunged to an all-time low in December.
Fox Business correspondent Brenda Butner. Oscar nominations out this morning. Benjamin Button led the pack with 13 nods. Other Best Picture nominees, Frost Nixon, Milk, The Reader, and Slumdog Millionaire. Comeback kid Mickey Rourke gets a Best Actor nod for his work in The Wrestler. Fox News, we report. You decide.
This is Bill O'Shaughnessy. For years and years around here, Mario Bulfamante and his son, Stephen, Anthony, and Benny have been the royalty of the landscaping and outdoor maintenance world, and I don't exaggerate a bit. Their marvelous new headquarters near the New Rochelle Humane Society off Fifth Avenue and off Potter is not the easiest place in the world to find, I can tell you, but it's the place individual homeowners go on their own for advice on everything that grows. And it's also the place professional landscapers take their clients to select plantings. The Mario Bulfamante and Sons Garden Center is a Westchester treasure. Call 914-636-4428 and ask for Anthony, Stephen, Benny, or the great Mario Bulfamante himself for directions. It's Mario Bulfamante time again in the land, I tell you.
Remember those days of playing your favorite song on the jukebox at the corner candy store at the malt shop? This is Tani. Go back in time with Dennis Nardone every Sunday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. as he plays the greatest songs ever recorded. Doo-wop, street corner harmony, soul, and good old rock and roll. Music from Dion, The Cress, The Five Satins, Flamingos, The Harp Tones, and many, many more of your favorite doo-wop groups of all time. So tune in with Dennis Nardone every Sunday on this very same station, WVOX 1460 AM and WVOX.com on the internet. And go back in time with the Dennis Nardone Remember Then Oldie Music radio show every Sunday at 11 AM.
Updated weather forecast in Westchester County and vicinity. We start off with mostly clear skies and sunshine for the morning. More partly sunny for the afternoon. Our highs will range into the mid-30s. Tonight, partly cloudy. Overnight lows down to around 20. Friday's looking mostly sunny. Our highs will range into the middle 40s. That night, there's a chance of some rain or snow showers down near 30. Back to some colder weather this weekend. On Saturday, partly sunny. Might be a flurry. Highs in the lower 30s, but Sunday, mostly sunny, only mid to upper 20s. Once again, for today, sunny to partly sunny, mid-30s, even warmer tomorrow. I'm meteorologist Steve Pelletieri for Whitney Media, WVOX, WVIP.
1460 WVOX.
We are back. You're listening to Environmentally Sound on WVOX AM 1460 in New Rochelle, New York. I am Bob Levensold, your host for this program. We have on the line Kathy Reichs, author and producer and forensic anthropologist and lecturer. We'll get right back to you in a second. I just want to tell you again about the Learning Shop. Learning Shop is a full-service tutoring company, which is in Harrison, New York. You can reach them at 914-835-1070. They provide homebound services for upwards of 20 Westchester County school districts, including Bronxville, Rye, Edgemont, Chappaqua, and New Rochelle. In addition, they provide private tutoring in all academic areas and for any number of standardized tests, GEDs, SATs, and anything that you need. They also run an after-school resource room program. They've been doing that for over 7 years with numerous successes for college-bound students and remedial instruction. Again, their telephone number is 914-835-1070. I recommend them highly. I have worked with them. I have worked for them. I go to their parties. There's always coffee and tea and bagels and cream cheese. It's just a great place to go. You don't even have to be going there for tutoring. It's just a wonderful atmosphere. And, of course, good tutoring and education comes with a good atmosphere. Okay, Kathy Reichs, again, is on the phone. Welcome back, Kathy Reichs.
Thank you.
Kathy, you're a doctor. May I ask what your degree is in?
I have a doctorate in physical anthropology with a specialty in forensic anthropology.
Now, of course, there are various anthropologies. There's cultural, physical. What are the rest of them?
Archaeology, linguistic.
Okay. that was a quick answer. Now, in this book here that I'm reading, Devil Bones, which is your recent and, in fact, your 11th novel. Yes?
Yes, it is.
It's your 11th novel, and it reads, I mean, it's just really racy and really, it moves along. You don't write like a scientist. You write like Mickey Spillane or Robin Cook. I mean that the pace-wise, it's not like, let me plod through this scientist's book. It's not at all like that. It's pop novel writing at its best, I would say. So as I read in Devil Bones about Tempe Brennan, who is a forensic anthropologist like yourself, she has to crawl into this deep tunnel where she's digging up remains from Santeria and or possibly other religions, celebrations. You don't actually do that, right?
Yes, I do.
You do?
Yeah, and each one of my books is based on some case I've worked on. I change everything, of course, all the details, or it's based on some experience I've had. In this case, it's kind of a melange of things that come to my lab every now and then. I'll get skulls that have been treated. They've been painted, or they're covered with wax, or they have chicken blood or feathers on them or something, and they've obviously been used in ceremonial displays of some kind or religious activities of some kind.
So if you're out in the field, are you... you have to deal with smells, of course, when you're coming across fresh corpses. You don't always find just bones. Sometimes they're recently dead, and they must smell bad. And also, if you're in this tunnel, there's got to be claustrophobia. I think you even mentioned that with Book Tempe. How about that? Do you get any of those feelings?
Well, I certainly deal with the smells, whether it's in the autopsy room or out in the field. Mm-hmm. Anthropologists, by definition, work on bodies that are compromised. They're decomposed or mummified or burned or dismembered, or perhaps they're just bones. So we have to deal with a nasty smell, or with nasty smells, or with maggots, or, you know, that's part of the job. As far as, I forget the second part of your question. Was it smell?
Well, the claustrophobia.
The claustrophobia, that's something, again, I gave to Tempe. I don't necessarily have, you know, overwhelming claustrophobia. Nobody likes to be trapped in a small, dark place. But that's another problem I've given her, just to give her character dimension, to give it complexity and things that, you know, she has to overcome so that we can identify with her. She's not a perfect superhuman type of heroine.
May I ask what some of your... flaws that I don't want to get too personal.
That's why I write fiction. I certainly couldn't draw on myself, right?
Well, you could find something in you and change it.
That's for sure. But I was doing an interview with the British love to do theme interviews, and the theme of this was, you know, name things you're afraid of. And I kept going through my mind, well, okay, I'm not afraid of spiders, and I'm not afraid of snakes, and I'm not afraid of the dark, and I'm not afraid of heights, and I really had to dig to find something that I had an irrational fear of.
And?
I guess the thing if you were to say what scares me most would be that something would happen to one of my children. That scares me more than thinking about myself going down in a plane or myself, you know, drowning in the ocean. Oh. I'm invulnerable.
Oh, I like that. Yeah, we will never die.
Yeah.
We will never die.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of that also, in the book, I had it take some pause at this. You send, I'm just mixing you all up, actually, Book Tempe sends her remains to an entomologist, to an entomologist in Hawaii.
Yeah.
Now, I'm a member of the New York Environmental society. I'm sorry, entomological society. And I resent that. Why don't you send something closer?
Well, I
we got good guys up here.
I know, but are they board certified in forensic entomology?
Oh, you got me with the paper, didn't you?
Academic entomologist is not the same. And I have worked in the past with a gentleman named Dr. Lee Goff, who happens to be in Hawaii. And if I'm FedExing specimens, and so I know him, I rely on him. He's board certified. He's very experienced. And if I'm FedExing specimens to New York or Arizona or Hawaii, it's the same thing. They're there the next day. So.
I thought I had you, but that's a perfect answer.
Yeah.
The certification and all.
There you go.
Well, okay. Now, in the TV series, you have a character named Hodgins, and he's actually on site as part of the forensics team, and he does all that work. So that I guess that the producers just wanted to put it all together and not deal with FedEx trucks.
Hodgins is our bug and slime guy.
Yeah. And can I ask you, you probably can't answer this because it deals with the future. Zach, who is the main lab, the king of the lab, they used to have this competition, who's the king of the month? Was it Zach or Hodgins?
Right.
He recently got himself in a jam, as we all know, and he wound up in a mental facility, locked up. I like the way they pulled him out to do this this last case. But is he coming back? Can we talk about that?
Well, there's always that possibility.
You are a TV producer.
There's always that possibility.
Now, what do I want to ask you about? You have nerdic and squintic and geekic tendencies. Yes, but you seem to have the ability to get out of that, and not only write fiction, but at least put on the kind of clothes that photograph well, and you're quite attractive. What is your life like? I mean, do you just work, and then write when you have time? Is that exactly what you do?
Because I don't have the luxury of being a full-time writer. I do a book a year, and that's pretty demanding, even if you're a full-time writer. But since I'm not, I'm still engaged in casework. I still commute to Montreal, and then, of course, out to the West Coast for the show. Any day I'm free that I'm not at the lab or traveling or testifying or whatever, I do write all day. I try to get at it by about 8:30 in the morning and stay at it with a lunch break maybe until 5 or 6 at night.
Wow.
It takes discipline. Writing is not, it just doesn't flow from me, you know, from my brain to the paper. It's hard work. You write it and then you rewrite it about 25 times and you keep polishing and working, and it can be tedious.
Now, I've asked other people a similar question. If you had to give up one of your professions, or not had to for any compelling reason other than that you wanted to make your life a little bit easier, maybe hang with grandchildren or whatever, or you have a special guy or whatever it may be, which would you give up? Would you give up the forensics, or would you give up the writing? Would you give up the lecturing? What would you do?
Well, I think, that's a tough one, because I think what gives my books their authenticity is the fact that I actually do what I'm writing about. I'm actually in the lab. I'm not just researching it. So I think that's what gives the writing an edge. It's a real feedback process for me. I will say I've pulled way back. I'm not doing as much forensic work as I once was doing. I'm not consulting to the military lab out in Hawaii. I'm not involved in disaster recovery work right now. Fortunately, we haven't had anything to recover for a while. And I have cut back on the number of cases, private cases that I accept. So, you know, I have made concessions there. I don't teach anymore. I'm still on faculty at the university, but I've been on sabbatical for about 11 years, so that's a pretty good job.
Yeah. So I guess you parallel somewhat, I suppose, a colleague of yours, Robin Cook, the author, also a best-selling author who writes about a book a year. You know Robin's work?
Yes, I do.
And he of course, is a doctor, and he considers himself a doctor who writes, a doctor first. He uses cutting-edge issues as inspiration for his fiction. Are there any cutting-edge issues? I presume that forensics continues to advance and evolve.
Yeah, I'm always looking for, in addition to my own cases, whenever I'm at the lab, of course, my ear is always open, listening, not just my cases, but cases that might be coming into the lab. But I'm also always on the outlook for issues or things that are in the news. The book I've just finished, which will be out next summer, called 206 Bones, deals with the issue of bad science and rogue scientists. So within forensics, people who really aren't qualified or competent to be doing what they're doing. So, yes, I am constantly looking for those kinds of issues.
Right. Well, there are scientists in all fields that don't quite make it, but they're hired by industry and other special interests because they have the credential to testify in court and create doubts. And people like our former president use that all the time. And lawyers always, they'll take a scientist who's credentialed but who has lost his way or her way as far as being in a true scientist, and just okay. Well, will you stretch things and say this, which is what we want you to say? And of course, they do for the money.
Well, exactly. Or you have scientists who might be competent in one area who overstep, and you know, a pathologist who testifies on anthropology, or an anthropologist who testifies on entomology. Mm-hmm. And unless you're certified in that area, you really have no business doing that.
Yes, or also somebody who say, well, there's a 90% probability that you're right, but they'll beef up that 10% and just to make it look right. Yeah. Well, let's go to some of the scenarios on the TV show, which I'm guessing you were never buried underground in a car.
That has not happened to me yet.
Okay. Fortunately, and never will, I predict.
Hopefully.
But did you ever, in one case, Tempe, there's this, you'll recall the episode where Tempe is, there's a guy who creates art out of junk cars, I think it is. And in this one case, there's a body trapped in this junk car.
Okay.
And you know the episode I'm talking about, I presume?
Yes.
And they can't get at the bones, and TV Tempe is a bone forensic person. She doesn't really deal with flesh and other tissue. She's a bone gal. So in order to get at the bones, it's time sensitive. She throws some beetles in there, which flesh-eating beetles. Have you ever done that?
I don't use domestic beetles. I know I have colleagues who do. They're hard to keep. They're hard to keep in their little environments, their little cages, I guess you could call it. So you really have to have a specialized facility for them. So I don't use them.
But would you have done what she did? I don't presume she had them sitting around, but when she saw the need, she went and found some?
You could. I am more of a, you know, depending on how sensitive what it is you're reducing, just let nature take its course. Or we have a special unit that basically boils the flesh off.
But in this case,
I described that in one of the books.
No, that's fine. But in fact, when you treat any kind of bones, if you want to mount a chicken or something, you boil them. That's the best way to get
exactly.
the bones clean.
And the
I
problem
guess.
With domestic beetles is if there's something very delicate, say in the little tiny facial bones or something, they'll sometimes chomp right through that as well.
Oh.
So they don't necessarily know where the lunch line stops, you know.
No, of course. And you make that point in this book, too. I can't quite bring it up, but something, I think the corpse that was found right by the waterside, I'm still wondering, I'll tell you what I'm wondering. I'm wondering why it was not eaten by animals, and there was very few insects and pupae and so forth on this corpse, and
exactly.
I'm waiting for the explanation. I kind of think maybe they sprayed it with some insecticide or something nasty, but that's just my guess.
A working theory.
What did I want to ask you here? Your portrayal, again, we have Book Tempe, who is much more... has much more personality. She's much more vulnerable, much more flawed. And then we have Emily Deschanel's character, TV Tempe. You say that you like what she has done with it. Has she stretched it beyond what you would have imagined, and are you happy with where she's gone with it?
Oh, I think I am. I think they're both flawed, but in different ways. And again, it's because it's an earlier point in Tempe's life. She's younger. She's in Washington, which I find appropriate because that's where I started my career. The very first skeleton I ever handled was at the Smithsonian Institution. And, of course, the show is set at a thinly veiled. What we called it, the Jeffersonian Institution.
Right.
And I think, and the other thing is, everyone's gotten so much better. When we first looked at the pilot, we thought, this is great. And then now when we look back at the pilot, we kind of do that cringe thing because we've gotten so much better. We're in season 4 mm-hmm. with the show, and I do think the writing has gotten so much better, just everything about it, the acting, the David and Emily have taken on their roles, and the interaction, the chemistry between them is phenomenal.
Well, you say something, Emily has done... Emily has created a character that you like, but then you also say something when they ask you about, this is a previous interview that you did, they ask you about David, and you say, well, Dave Boreanaz is, well, what need one say? I presume he, in person, exudes that charismatic, handsome, hunky guy even more so than he does on TV.
Well, it's hard to believe it's possible, but David's even better looking in person than he is on screen.
He's a handsome man, yeah.
And he's a very, very nice man, very family-oriented.
Well, if you remember his previous series, Angel, as on the Buffy the Vampire series, and
right.
then on his own show, he was always the good vampire. The vampire,
yeah.
While I guess by definition he did not have a soul, he did, he tried to reach for one, I guess is the best way to put that.
Vampires, before it was cool to be vampires. But I think David's very happy not to be playing a vampire after having done that for 7 years or whatever it was.
Yeah, I think he does a really good job with that. You work with, TV Tempe is a bone doctor, and I get that Book Tempe is more of a more general, where she works with other remains as well. Is that true, and how does your own work fit into that?
Well, again, the physical anthropologist, I work with pathologists. What the pathologist does, and that would be the CAM role on the show, is what you think of as a classic autopsy, where they make a Y incision and they go in and they take out the liver and the brain and that sort of thing. The cases that come to the anthropologist are the ones where you can't do a regular autopsy because the body's in bad shape, again, because it's very badly decomposed or it's dismembered or it's mummified or it's mutilated or perhaps it's just skeletal. So those are the cases. And what the forensic anthropologist does is any information we get is derived from bone. That's the name of the show, Bone. So often on the show, Tempe will have to wait until CAM has done what she can do or they've taken specimens for toxicology testing or whatever. And then they reduce it. They clean it. And it comes out nice, clean, and you'll always see the scene where the bones are now laid out nice and clean in the form of a skeleton. And that's when the forensic anthropology really comes into play.
So the forensic anthropology is basically a bone thing.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's our specialty. And we focus, usually when I'm called into a case, it's for one of two questions. One would be identity, to try to figure out who a completely unknown set of remains, who is this person? And we tell the police the age and the sex and the race and the height. You can't use DNA at that point. You can't use dental records because you don't have a name. You don't know whose dentist to go to. So they'll take my profile, age, sex, race, height, match it against missing persons lists, and then they get a possible. They get a name. And at that point, you can go and get dental records or DNA. So identity is one thing we work on. The other would be cause of death, manner of death. We have sharp instrument trauma, bullet entrances or exits, bludgeoning, what was the cause of death? And in some cases, what happened to the body after death? Was it dismembered? Was it you know, treated with acid? Was it stuffed in a trunk or something like that? So
right. Well, that comes up very clearly in the TV show where you're constantly weighing physical injuries. Was this congenital? Did this happen just as the person was living a life? Was he or she a tennis player by the stresses on the bones? And then were certain injuries inflicted post or post-mortem or before they die? So you identify the person. Are you usually successful in identifying the person?
You know, I'm not sure what percentage. I do have cases in my lab that have never been identified. I have skeletons that are there
20 years that I've been working there. Others are identified, but the family hasn't claimed the remains. Or sometimes we will retain specimens if someone's identified, but and it's a criminal case and no one's ever been charged or no one's ever been brought to trial. So I really can't give you the percentage of success rates.
But you succeed much of the time.
Much of the time, yes.
Good. Now, you are coming to New York next week.
I am coming to New York.
I will be there at the 92nd Street Y in Manhattan. I will make your acquaintance in person at that time. The details are, it is at the 92nd Street Y, which is Lexington Avenue and 92nd Street in Manhattan. Time is 8:15. And today's guest, Kathy Rikes, will be, I never know what to call those things, conversations, lectures, what do you call it?
I'm going to do a PowerPoint. We're going to have fun.
Okay.
I'll show some examples of what forensic anthropology is all about, and then some examples of the cases on which my books have been based.
Oh, fabulous. I'm looking forward to that.
But no really nasty pictures.
Well, I'm accustomed to that from the TV show. I'm generally sitting down to eat when I turn that on, and there we have all this gore in the first couple of scenes, and it's, I have to get over that, but
right.
I really want to watch
it.
The show. just a quick thing. You dedicate this book to two police officers who were killed in the line of duty, specifically that were both killed in April on April 1st of 2007, and then you list all of the others, which there must be about 20 maybe or so,
right.
Other officers that were killed in the line of duty in Charlotte, Mecklenburg, North Carolina. Why did you do that?
Well, when I was writing the book, that took place, and Charlotte was pretty shocked by that and very saddened by that. So I followed her, and I worked with the cops all the time. So I just wanted to dedicate the book to them, and since I was doing that, I thought, well, I'm going to go back and research and find out everyone that's ever been killed in trying to enforce law in
very nice.
The place where I live.
Now, in the book, and we only have about 30 seconds, in the book, you actually know this, the officer who is killed. Is that
right.
The case with any of these other officers?
I did not know them personally.
Did not know. No. Okay. All right, Kathy Rikes, it's been a great pleasure having you on. I look forward to seeing you at your PowerPoint thing at the Y.
And
next
that'll be on the 27th, I
27th.
Think.
It's next, I didn't next. Say that. Next Tuesday, is it?
Yeah.
Okay, that's next Tuesday, January 27th, 8:15, 92nd Street Y. Thank you so much, Kathy Rikes.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye. I'd like to thank Dr., professor, author, TV producer, lecturer, scientist, Kathy Rikes for joining us on Environmentally Sound tonight. How a person can be all those things and well put together also is a puzzle. There are other accomplished scientists, okay, nerds, well-rounded, like astrophysicist Neil deGrasse Tyson, but they're not what comes to mind when we think of scientists. Kathy Rikes seems to balance all of her activities quite well and have enough time to fit in whatever social life as well. Kudos. She helps catch bad guys and entertain her audience with books and bones. Our thought for the week, once again, happy to have Barack Obama as president and not ashamed to say so. Stay tuned to WVOX, your quintessential community radio station, the flagship of Whitney Radio. Next up, newspaper publisher Howard Sterman, who is in the house with the Hometown Hour. Thank you very much for listening. Remember to be kind, for everyone you meet is fighting a great battle. You are here. It is now. Health and happiness to you all.